about this path is that none of you are going to take home the same thing. That there are going to be different ways that Spirit speaks to us in that very personal way, that the way that life works. And that's what I want to talk to you about today. The message title is Set Your Sail. And I wanted to use, I have always wanted to do a whole talk on that great Ella Wheeler Wilcox quote where she says, I'm going to tell you what she says because it's really worth it. This is just one little tidbit of the poem, but 'tis the set of the sail and not the gale that determines the way we go. It determines the course. And what's beautiful about that is that life does offer us some things. Last week, we spoke to the idea of our experience, our everyday experiences, and how that is educational for us if we pay attention to that. And I wanted to sort of piggyback on that same thought and look today at the way we have those experiences and the way we show up and participate and choose how to now move through that the course of whatever it is we are learning about. And the gorgeous part of one of the things I'm having a really fun time with are the themes that CSL, Centers for Spiritual Living, has given us these different themes for the month, for the full year. And so I find it really fun to, it challenges me to be able to talk about what all the ministers are sort of loosely talking about. And then to put my flair on it and to choose my own talk titles around it and to look at what is it that we're all talking about. And this month, the month of March, is about embracing education as a lifelong endeavor. Isn't that beautiful? Isn't that really exquisitely beautiful? Because that's what we stand strong in. Our founder, Dr. Ernest Holmes, was very insistent that we are an educational organization. We don't look real churchy. We don't preach, and we don't proselytize. Isn't that lovely? I like that we don't. I like you to drag people here. I do. I like to have a, you know, I like to fill the seats, of course. But I love that we don't use that as sort of a burdensome kind of thing that we have to be doing that. So we by nature of what excites us in this philosophy, we will sort of spread the word in our own way because we can't resist it, right, Reverend Cheryl? That's right. We just can't resist it sometimes. And yet, what I know also about any kind of education, not just spiritual education, but let's talk about academia, you know, for a minute, is that whenever we open ourselves to a different perspective, which comes from more information, whenever we do that, we broaden our perspective, and therefore we can no longer walk through the world in a narrow-minded sort of way. So it's good. Education is good for us. It stretches us. Some parents find it cumbersome when the kids start getting too much education and get a little full of themselves and make it a little difficult to live with. I remember being very young, and I had learned to count, and I thought I could count to 1,000, and so I was counting to my mom and dad in the car as we drove on a long road trip all the way up to 100, and I got all the way to 100, and my poor little parents, now that I think back, this is really funny, then I went 100, 200, 300, 400, and both my mom and said, oh, no, 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 and they said, that's not right, and I argued with them and said, yes, that's what the teacher taught us. So I did not believe my parents. I gave the teachers a higher perspective of authority. And as I was thinking about that, I began to remember that what my college days were like. So I went to community college right out of high school. Now, in the neighborhood and the time that I grew up, there weren't a lot of us that went off to college after high school. A lot of people were still getting married at that age did a trade, got a job. And I went off to community college. I was the first one in a long string of family members that to actually get a little college education. But I didn't really want to be there. So it was like, I don't know, I was probably looking for a husband, I got to be honest. It worked out well. I didn't find him at on the campus, but I moved out of the house when I was 18 years old. Got after high school, I got my own apartment and I got a job, and I went to school full time and I worked full time. And and I met my husband at because I was a waitress and he was a customer. I still love him. He's clapping. Good job, honey. Let's hear it. So what I noticed about my school days when I was 18 and 19 years old is that I didn't get great grades, wasn't really interested in great grades, kind of messed with my, your GPA when you go back to school in your 30s and you're smart finally. So I was on the honor roll all the time, every term as an adult when I went back to school, but I didn't get to graduate with that, that really smart club I was in. No, it was community college still, community college. Yeah. So, it was the Dean's List, and then there was a great woman's service club that I was privileged to be a part of, but I didn't get to graduate. I didn't get to sit with them because when I was 18 and 19, I didn't pull the grades that I did later, right? So here's what happened. I waited till I was about 35. I'm in my mid-30s. I go back to school. Suddenly, I feel so smart while I'm sitting in these rooms with the 18 and 19-year-old students, right? And what happened for me was that I really wanted to be in school in my mid-30s. And I was able, because I had a lot of my required, I worked to get to university, so I had to do all of those general ed things, meet all the prereqs. But what I noticed was that all the kids that were sitting in that classroom because their parents didn't want to pay for the four-year school, they wanted them to do the 2 years at community college, was that they just didn't want to be there. They were just like me when I was 18 or 19. And as I thought about that, I think it has something to do with authority. See, when we're 18 and 19 years old, we're about to individuate, but we probably haven't done that yet. In fact, we're really blessed if we do it in our early 20s, because if you don't do it in your 20s, you get to do it around 40 or so, and it's really not pleasant when you try and individuate at 40. You have to fire everybody in your family, and, I think that's why so many of us have at least one estranged adult child. They just waited too long to individuate. So, what I can say is that as I'm sitting there hungry to learn, and I'm in Mr. Jan's English class, it was that English composition class that's really hard and you have to take it, you have to learn how to write those research papers, right? And Mr. Jans had given us this massive list of vocabulary words. And he liked to do this. He would start out every day. We'd be sitting there. I had it at 8 o'clock in the morning. And he would look around the room and he would go, Miss Sheets, please define lugubrious. Or he'd say, Miss Copper, you're looking so lugubrious today. Is everything okay? And then he would look at Miss Sheets and say, what does that mean? Please tell the class what that means. And everybody would just freak out if they didn't know, because you could not memorize all those definitions. And so when he would do that to me, this is where I began to notice the difference. I would say, I don't know what lugubrious means, but I'm ready to learn. I want to know. Tell me. Teach me. That's what I'm here for. And so it changed the whole nature of the classroom setting. And I think that that's really a good lesson for us, because as we age, we no longer need to see that external authority out there. I talked about that last week, didn't I, about externalizing. And we begin to, especially if we anchor ourselves in a spiritual path, we begin to understand that all the power we need is within us. And that's what Ella Wheeler Wilcox was referencing when she talked about setting the sail. Also in that poem, Ella says that one ship will go east and another ship will go west, and they're both using the same wind. Right? The way the wind blows, you can use it in whatever way it comes across you. So sometimes storms move through our lives and we have to pick up the pieces, sort of. But there are other times where the wind is a force that then serves us. And we just set our sails so that we are in that place. I really was touching to hear you do the, I love that heartbeat song anyhow. Jennifer, that it's about letting go of the shore and trusting that process of life. So everything we teach here is about determining what that divine pattern looks like for your very own life, because we can only do it our way. It makes me really stop and think about that statement: when the student is ready, the teacher appears. So the teacher's always there, the lesson is always there, but we just can't till we can open ourselves to it. And I think that learning to set the sail of the craft, of our own vessel, is that which then will help us tap into either that current in life or finding our way to get in the flow, finding our place, alignment in that divine pattern, you know, all those clever ways we talk about it. But it's the same thing. It's that power. It's that presence that we talk about every week in every class. Every great spiritual author writes about it and uses terms that are understandable from a certain perspective. And we're all just building on that all the time. So it's helpful to realize that that power, that force that we're using as an illustration of how the wind can work in our favor, it's helpful when we realize that that power is within every living thing. It's never missing, it's never absent, it's never limited even, that the fullness of that divine, intelligent power is active in every living thing. So that power or that intelligence is the very thing that puts fruit on a tree. And it is that same intelligence that assures that in that fruit there will be seeds for future plantings. It is that same intelligence that right now is greening our trees. I have a neighbor next door whose tree goes bare every winter, and I just noticed yesterday that it's the most gorgeous shade of green with all that new growth all over it. Already it's creating shade in my yard in the morning. Right? It's that intelligence. It's that instinct. It's that knowing. It's that which, if you look at a sea turtle, you know, how does that happen? That there's something that just within that sea turtle in the egg, buried in the ground at the beach, something wakes up and the turtle knows he has to get out of the shell, or she, and they have to dig their way up through the sand, and then they have an instinct to head right for the ocean, and they even know they got to do it quickly or they might be somebody's dinner. Right? So it's that. That's what we're talking about, is that brilliance that is in all living matter, and it's working all the time. And let me just say this yet again. It's a law. It has to work. And so because it's there in every living thing all the time, anybody can use it. Anybody can use it. So the people who seem to have the greatest success in life, think about the people you know that you would name successful, it's as though they have learned something that other people, others of us perhaps, have not quite figured out, at least not at that level. Now notice, I am not speaking just about religious people. I'm not talking about spirituality. I'm talking about the way anybody can gain enough wisdom from living and understand that principle of something in the universe that's greater than we are, smarter than we are, bigger than we are, and that it is a power for good, and we can align to it and we can use it, and then we have a different experience in the everyday events of our life. So it is a stupendous energy. And it's just there, and it's there all the time. If we think of it as an intelligent force such as the wind, if we think of the wind holding power in it, and certainly we're learning to catch that power, right? We're seeing more and more of the wind turbines, thank you. We're finding that it's a source of energy that just exists, and so we scientifically use what we can understand in the way our beautiful brains are made to be able to decipher that stuff, and we can use it. And that is such a good example of how that power is always there, and actually it's right here. It's in you. It's in you. You don't got to bump into it. It's there, and we can use it whenever we choose. So I want to talk to you about sailing for a minute. I don't really want to talk to you about sailing because this part was hard for me. I Googled a lot. I spent way too much time trying to figure out, because from my limited perspective, not being much of a sailor, I could not figure out how on earth do you move forward. I understand tacking. I get that there's a way you can tack a sailboat and it will propel you forward, but I don't understand why. I wanted to understand the mechanics. So I Googled and I read all this sophisticated stuff that went right over my head. I found the simplest article I could and I printed it and I took it to my husband, because you know, if Google doesn't work, you can Hugel. And so I took it to Hugh and I said, "Honey, help me understand this." And he lit up like, "Oh my God, this is great. She's asking me to help, you know, I'm going to help." But he could not speak it in words I could comprehend. He took me this way, and then he took me that way, and he talked about the keel and the ballast and this and that. And I said, "Would you draw it out for me? I don't understand. Where's the sail and where's the, you know?" So, and he had to define some things for me. And then finally I said, "Go to your baseball game. It's too hard. Just go do baseball." And then I took the notes I made while he spoke to me, and I decided to give you the abbreviated version, because for me, it's kind of like that part of math that I can't quite wrap my head around, you know? Enough about that. So what I can tell you is, what I think I want to enhance in this part of the conversation is that, first of all, think about all the boats, all the giant ships that never had engines that took people across oceans. That alone boggles my brain. As I was diving in and trying, just looking at that, it's something I had never thought about. Like, surely the pilgrims on the Mayflower had some kind of, you know, they really, sailors understand that the laws that happen out at sea. So there are physical laws that involve the current, the movement of the water, what's going on in the water, and then they use the wind, and then they create these great sails, and probably there's some great instinct that comes when you do that a lot. I think that it would be like other things that we master, sort of like driving, you know, when you're learning to drive and it's cumbersome and you have to think a lot, and then suddenly one day you just get it. So something happens at an intuitive level that shifts for us. So Hugh said, so it has to be true, that every boat has a keel, K-E-E-L, I looked it up, and the keel is indeed, he was right, it's the ballast thing, and it goes from one end to the next. There are ship terms I didn't worry about knowing for you. You know them. You sailors know this stuff, and that the keel keeps the boat sort of weighted, and where you point the keel by way of the wheel that sort of steers the boat, is how you direct the direction, but you have to understand also what's going on in the water and the relationship of the wind with the direction of the keel, all right? So there's a whole complex thing that's going on to make something sort of simple happen. And when you position the keel, so let's say you go across, you want to cross the lake. You got a little sailboat and you want to go across the lake. You get in the lake and put the sail up, and the wind is right behind you, and you just get taken right across the lake to the other side. But the wind continues to blow in that direction, and now you want to come back. You're going to use that same wind by those movements that I'm talking about here, and you move in a zigzag. They call it tacking. You move in a zigzag fashion, and every time you move the sail, it catches the wind, and it pushes the boat or the ship. Sometimes it pushes it in a forward or a determined way based upon who's at the helm and how you're steering the craft. So it's about the placement of the sail in relationship to the position of the keel, and that back and forth movement in the way that they interact together, so that whoever is the captain of the boat can get it in a desired direction, right? And that's how life is. That's just how life is. We have to look at relationships, the way one thing relates to the next thing, in order to find a way to move ourselves through certain channels or certain issues or situations. But it is the change of the sails, the set of the sail, right? We're talking about the set of the sail. It is the change of the sail that creates the momentum that gets you back across the lake to get home again. And by the way, when I looked up the word keel, and it talked about it being that long, solid, from point to point, that another meaning for the word keel is the breast of a bird. And I thought that was very interesting, that we're talking about movement, that a bird flies, and we're talking about the way the boat and the wind work together. It's interesting. I'm wondering if there might be some root connection. I love words. So Ella Wheeler Wilcox said, remember, the ship can go east and another ship can go west. They're using the very same wind, and that's what we do in our lives. When we tap into that power, when we tap into that force in the universe and recognize it whatever situation we're in. So in this teaching, in the science of mind, we teach principle. We teach about studying the same universal laws that the sailors used to move their ships across the ocean. Wow, now see, that feels big. Right? I mean, sometimes I'll do a prayer treatment. I'll do a spiritual mind treatment. I'll pray for a certain outcome, and then it shows up. That is the same power that moves a ship across the ocean. You know, it makes no difference to that great intelligence, that power, the law, whatever you call it, God, spirit. It makes no difference what we are treating for, what the desire of our heart is. It is always available to us. So we, let's say spiritual centers and spiritual, you know, because spirituality is so much about personal growth. I think maybe that's the whole banana. Anyhow, did I just make that up, the whole banana? You're so polite. Enchilada. I meant enchilada. Mark kindly reminded me I meant enchilada. So what we teach is that we all stand at the helm of our own life. Amen. Right? Yes. We all stand at the helm of our own life. And whether you decide to turn the wheel and make your choices or not is still a decision. So you can go with the current. Sometimes it pays to let go of the shore and let spirit move you. If you're overwhelmed, that's the best thing to do. And sometimes we are confronted with something where we're invited to make a different decision and move in a different direction. And we have the tools and the skills for that. Sometimes life does ask us to do a little zigzag. Sometimes I say, what's that saying I like? You sometimes you just got to learn to dance with the boogeyman. You got to do the boogie with the boogeyman, right? Things that scare us. Just learn the dance steps for that. And we do all of this at a very individual level. So each of us, the student is ready. So each of us are in a different state of readiness. So we tap into and grab whatever we can use at the time so that we can maneuver our self. Capital S, that inner self, that God stuff that's never away from us. Now, the other thing that we have in our favor is that others have traveled this path before us. There are teachers and great thinkers and wise, wise ones who have written books and left paths. They have walked it and given us the illustration of what it could look like. And I was thinking about the great teacher Jesus. That this man, Jesus, devoted his entire life to waking up to these truths and then living his life in such a way that he demonstrated how all of this works. So you might say that he knew, the best gift I think that I love in the message of Jesus is that he knew that our belief shapes our world. that it impacts our experiences. He understood that belief is a mental attitude, right? And so when we come to classes, we look at, well, what do you believe? You know, and we start looking and we dive deep and start looking at some of those hidden beliefs. And so I think we could say that if you look at the life that Jesus gave, the example we have scripturally that was recorded, we can see that, you know, he studied the, it was almost like he studied the wind, right? He knew how to set a sail. It's like he studied it, he intuitively got it, and he lived his life aligned to it. So here's this man who really got at a deep level spiritual principle, the things that we are always talking about here, and then he performed these extraordinary acts, which were then called miraculous, and then it seems that somehow in the way that this genius, this spiritual genius of a human being, in the way that he brought this profound new message to us, to the world, in trying to preserve it and record it, and not lose those profound ways of thinking that were different, we put it into something that we now have great reverence for in Scripture, and we have made him so perfect that we then feel like we never quite measure up. You know, what would Jesus do? What would Jesus do? And then sometimes people will say to you or me or us, that's like, well, come on, Jesus was perfect, and we all know we're not that perfect. And, you know, I find a problem with that. I think that we, by trying to make Jesus so perfect, and then Christianity trying always so hard to be perfect, and I think that's where spiritual bypass comes from. Then it's harder to look at the shadow if you don't think you're living up to a morality or whatever it is that we're taught from sometimes in religion. But I want to suggest that when we look at the idea of the perfection of the man Jesus, that maybe we can begin to see that what he did have was a perfect understanding of how the law works. He was perfect in his relationship of using and understanding spiritual principle. And we have that same intelligence in us that can help us play in it. Now, certainly he was a great, perhaps one of the greatest spiritual geniuses of the ages. But he knew how to sail his ship. And my concern, and I've probably mentioned it in here before, but we have made him so godly that we have missed his humanity, and the lesson for us as human beings is in the life that he lived. So as we look at this idea, I want you to really think about this, because this comes up often in the foundation class, where somebody will make reference to the perfection of Jesus. And though I don't disagree with that, I just interpret it slightly different, because I want you to know that from my reading of the Gospels, I will tell you that it's very clear to me that he got angry. And I would say that he suffered. We have an image of that, a time where he suffered. I would say that he, I know somebody's going like, duh. It's Easter, we can all feel it. We're in Lent, you know, we can all feel that heaviness right now. I would say people disappointed him. That's not so perfect, you know, I mean, that's almost like on a judgment kind of scale. And then I would say that he also had this gorgeous way, because he saw something that's hard for us to see sometimes in people. He had a compassion that I'm not sure we can even define. At least it feels that way to me. And because of that, he had he cared in this very deep and beautiful way. He cared for people, but he cared for all people, not just Jewish people. He expanded that out, and he didn't care what your background was. He didn't care about your ethnicity. He didn't care about your character or your morals. He took a stand for all of it, and he believed that everyone had that place of benefit if we understand love, if we could move into a greater experience of and an understanding and a use of that great way. We should love God and we should love each other with all our hearts and all our actions and the, you know the golden rule. I like to paraphrase. Did you notice? We have these strong opinions. Oh, and by the way, he had a strong opinion. I would go so far as to say he had a strong opinion that allowed him to take a stand against religiously pious people. He didn't like all that stuff. You know, it's like, get off your high horse. He was pretty interesting character. I think we all should go away, if you're interested, go away for a week and read the Gospels without anybody telling you what's in there and see what you find, see what you uncover, see if you can see some of these other things that we don't give credit to. And I think if we re-examine this story, it'll be a greater benefit to us, because here's what happens. When we lose the humanness of the man, Jesus, we lose the chance to really understand the change that he came to bring. So he came, and he came to initiate change. He spoke about a new order or a new system, depending on what translation of the Bible you read. And he came for that, and we are still trying to be like him in the way we have been taught he is, and therefore, we are trying to be something that we don't believe we are. Now, think about that for a minute. In our attempt to try and be more Christian or more perfect or have better, more kindness, and I'm not saying those aren't all a part of the message. What I'm saying is, as we align to principle, we would have no choice but to be kinder and to be more loving and to understand that kind of compassion of which Jesus spoke. Right? Jesus would call, sometimes Jesus would be talking to God, and he would refer to God as a father, as a creator, and he would use that term Abba. I love that there's that interpretation in Scripture that's a very endearing term. It means, it's like Papa. It's a very special word. And I looked it up in the Metaphysical Bible Dictionary by the Fillmores. And it said that in the Bible days, that the term Abba was prohibited from use if you were a slave or a servant. There was a law that said you could never use that term to your master. You could not have that relationship with your master, even if you felt that way. And even if you had a good, sweet relationship like that. But that tells me that there was something very special that Jesus understood in the endearment, in the way that term is so tender and endearing in the way that it's used in the Bible, that it gives us some inside information about nurturing our own intimate relationship with God. Amen. See, as we sit, and I think we have to sit and be quiet. This is not about how heartfelt our prayers are. There's another way of sitting in the stillness, be still and know, that we then begin to intuit that essence of what love is in the way that Jesus tried to describe it, but we have not been able to fully wrap our minds around. And I think so much of what we see going on in our own lives would shift as we were able to have that sense of tender endearment to that fabulous presence and power that is always in our life, always guiding us, always directing us, always there as that great supportive presence, but at the same time as that essence of law that is just empowered every time we call on it. So we don't beg God to show up in our life and answer our prayers. We align ourselves to a greater truth, and everything else lines itself up for a greater experience of success. And I think that's the only way we're going to ever really begin to understand the kind of love that Jesus spoke of. Jesus knew how to set his sail. And when he missed the boat, he would just walk on the water and get on the boat anyhow. So. Listen up here. I'm almost done. So as we begin to wrap our head around all of this, our life starts to change because we start setting our sail and getting the advantage of moving in that natural divine stream of all that power. We can direct it. We can set the keel, stay on course, use the wind in our favor, and we get that forward motion, if that's what you're looking for. So we can use that force. We can get anywhere we need to be or want to be. But once we realize this, now I'm going to do a little Troward. Hang on. Moving into some Thomas Troward here. Once we get it, we will loosen out. This is Troward's idea. We loosen our belief on limitation. Now, I'm always talking in here about what happens if we could tap into the divine imagination and stretch what we believe is possible. I'm always saying consciousness is cumulative. The more you take in, the greater you'll be able to imagine something even more, something even better in our life. And we learn through all the classwork that there's this spirit of generosity in the universe, that God is always pouring out all this good. The grace of God is constantly streaming and pouring into our life now. Now, in Creative Mind and the Individual, Thomas Troward said 25% of this philosophy is pure Troward. Yes. That's a quarter of everything we teach here is Troward. We don't always give him credit, but I want you to know that. Troward said that once we don't believe in limitation anymore, we can begin to follow our own individuality in a way that we want to, right? When the student is ready, right? The information will show up and our world's going to bust open in a positive way. So Troward says, because we don't believe in limitation, we should base all our action on, this is so beautiful, oh, Reverend Cheryl, you're going to love this. We should base all our action, your activities you're doing, should be based on the fundamental desire for truth, for expanded aliveness, and for the creation of beauty. Three amazing things. And, you know, I got to tell you, it kind of blew my mind that Thomas Troward talks this way. You know, because she's going, duh. we put all of our action, we focus our action, our intention on truth. Well, yes, we emphasize that. But what a beautiful statement on expanded aliveness. Hear that. This is not about, oh, you should live your life fully alive. No, no, you need to have expanded aliveness every day. That means we want to expand it a little bit more tomorrow from what it was today, right? And forever and ever and ever. Nobody here is too old for that. Well, maybe Dean. But everybody else could still do that. So if you are feeling like you're lacking a little bit of that oomph, because I get real excited. I don't look this way every day, right? It's Sunday. I get to, you pay me to be excited. Troward said this, the trick to when you lose your oomph, the trick is to realize it's not your power. So I want to just review this, and this is where we're going to end. We never create any force, right? You set the sail. We're not talking about turning the motor on. We could certainly do that too. We never create any force, for example, electricity, but we provide special conditions under which that electricity, the force, can manifest itself in a variety of useful and beautiful ways. Unsuspected possibilities lay hidden in the power until brought to the light by the cooperation of the personal factor, that's you. We personalize the law. We are individualized expressions of it. We provide the suitable conditions, and that is how we specialize it. Yes. And that is what we teach here. Now, as we begin to embody this, you will see the conditions of your life will begin to change, and the contradictions that we see in life will mellow out, and you will begin to see the wholeness and the interconnection and the beauty of all of it. So let's take a breath. And we're going to anchor these words in that powerful activity of prayer. So just get comfortable where you're seated. And together we turn within. We turn within. Yeah, there it is. And as you just feel the movement of that music, pull you deeper. We recognize that this is the secret place of the Most High, place where God abides always. And as we just relax into this space, we soften, we clear our minds. We allow all the words in the conversation to just settle around this room. And I feel the love of God. I feel the love of God right at the core, the very center of my being. And as I know this is true for me, I know it is true for each person sitting in this room. I feel that love of God and know it is a mighty force, it is a power, it is greater than any wind that blows. It is a power for good, it is right here, right now. And as we breathe and we inhale and we become more aware of that activity of life within, we recognize that it is also the fullness of God's sweet peace. Peace that passes our human understanding. It is a peace in which we rest in God, in this divine life, in that beautiful current that moves us now even deeper as the words of this prayer continue to clarify greater truths. And so as we release any ideas around limitations, as we sense our oneness with life and with God and with each other, we simply tap into that place of knowing truth, these great and deep truths about the presence of God as that infinite intelligence of all the universe. And recognize God as that creativity and the beauty of all the universe, that which is flourishing even now in the springtime in the desert. I recognize that truth within as indeed a beacon of holy light. It is a divine illumination that sparks into a mighty flame, showing us the way so that we know which foot to put in front of the other as we move through life. It is that same wisdom that we intuit when we know which way to set the sail of our vessel. And so as we stand fully aligned to this great truth, awake and aware, we see the truths that we desire to experience in these upcoming days. And so I know that there is healing going on, that there is an awakening within the physical body, that intelligence that knows how to move us through the silly things like the flu and the colds and the coughs, things that are even now ignited in a greater way by this spoken word, that there is a truth in every body that is the truth of knowing how to be restored to our wholeness. And so I know that truth is revealing itself. I know that we are more clear and more awake than ever before, that we allow any sense of limitation to not constrict us in any way. It is as though we have burst through the straps that bind us, and we are free. So I know also, as we speak these words of love, of looking at that idea of an Abba, a loving, tender Papa Creator, that this is the tenderness of the divine, that is also the same force that blows every ship across an ocean, that cures everything that looks unlike health or vibrancy or vitality, that our finances are blessed and cleansed, and that we simply thrive in this new way of looking, of seeing, this broadened perspective. And so I say thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, life. I am so grateful. I am so grateful to remember yet again that this is how life works. And so in the spirit of deep, deep gratitude, I simply release the words of this prayer into that law that always says yes. I let it be. And together we say, so is. It's...
And of course, feel free to join in.
Or not.